Machines of the Year. As 1982 drew to a close, Jobs came to believe that he was going to be Times's Man of the Year. He arrived at Texaco Towers one day with the magazine's San Francisco bureau chief, Michael Moritz, and encouraged colleagues to give Moritz interviews. But Jobs did not end up on the cover. Instead, the magazine chose the computer as the topic for the year-end issue and called it the Machine of the Year. Accompanying the main story was a profile of Jobs, which was based on the reporting done by Moritz and written by Jay Cox, an editor who usually handled rock music for the magazine. With his smooth sales pitch and a blind faith that would have been the envy of early Christian martyrs, it is Stephen Jobs, more than anyone, who kicked open the door and let the personal computer move in, the story proclaimed. It was a richly reported piece, but also harsh at times. So harsh that Moritz, after he wrote a book about Apple and went on to be a partner in the venture firm Sequoia Capital with Don Valentine, repudiated it by complaining that his reporting had been siphoned, filtered, and poisoned with gossipy benzene by an editor in New York whose regular task was to chronicle the wayward world of rock and roll music. The article quoted Bud Tribble on Jobs's reality distortion field and noted that he would occasionally burst into tears at meetings. Perhaps the best quote came from Jeff Raskin. Jobs, he declared, would have made an excellent King of France. To Jobs's dismay, the magazine made public the existence of the daughter he had forsaken, Lisa Brennan. He knew that Kottke had been the one to tell the magazine about Lisa, and he berated him in the Mac Group workspace in front of a half dozen people. When the Time reporter asked me if Steve had a daughter named Lisa, I said, of course, Kottke recalled. Friends don't let friends deny that they're the father of a child. I'm not going to let my friend be a jerk and deny paternity. He was really angry and felt violated and told me in front of everyone that I had betrayed him. But what truly devastated Jobs was that he was not, after all, chosen as the Man of the Year. As he later told me, Time decided they were going to make me Man of the Year, and I was 27, so I actually cared about stuff like that. I thought it was pretty cool. They sent out Mike Moritz to write a story. We're the same age, and I had been very successful, and I could tell he was jealous, and there was an edge to him. He wrote this terrible hatchet job. So the editors in New York get this story and say, we can't make this guy Man of the Year. That really hurt, but it was a good lesson. It taught me to never get too excited about things like that, since the media is a circus anyway. They FedExed me the magazine, and I remember opening the package, thoroughly expecting to see my mug on the cover, and it was this computer sculpture thing. I thought, huh? And then I read the article, and it was so awful that I actually cried. In fact, there's no reason to believe that Moritz was jealous, or that he intended his reporting to be unfair, nor was Jobs ever slated to be Man of the Year, despite what he thought. That year, the top editors, I was then a junior editor there, decided early on to go with the computer rather than a person, and they commissioned, months in advance, a piece of art from the famous sculptor George Siegel to be a gatefold cover image. Ray Cave was then the magazine's editor. We never considered Jobs, he said. You couldn't personify the computer, so that was the first time we decided to go with an inanimate object. We never searched around for a face to be put on the cover. Apple launched the Lisa in January 1983, a full year before the Mac was ready, and Jobs paid his $5,000 wager to Couch. Even though he was not part of the Lisa team, Jobs went to New York to do publicity for it in his role as Apple's chairman and poster boy. He had learned from his public relations consultant, Regis McKenna, how to dole out exclusive interviews in a dramatic manner. Reporters from anointed publications were ushered in sequentially for their hour with him in his Carlisle Hotel suite, where a Lisa computer was set on a table and surrounded by cut flowers. The publicity plan called for Jobs to focus on the Lisa and not mention the Macintosh, because speculation about it could undermine the Lisa. But Jobs couldn't help himself. In most of the stories based on his interviews that day, in Time, Business Week, The Wall Street Journal, and Fortune, the Macintosh was mentioned. Later this year, Apple will introduce a less powerful, less expensive version of Lisa, the Macintosh, Fortune reported. Jobs himself has directed that project. Business Week quoted him as saying, "When it comes out, Mac is going to be the most incredible computer in the world." He also admitted that the Mac and the Lisa would not be compatible. It was like launching the Lisa with the kiss of death. The Lisa did indeed die a slow death. Within 2 years, it would be discontinued. It was too expensive, and we were trying to sell it to big companies when our expertise was selling to consumers, Jobs later said. But there was a silver lining for Jobs. Within months of Lisa's launch, it became clear that Apple had to pin its hopes on the Macintosh instead.